Hall, Purdue County, Jack and Gene Turner, on appeal of this conviction.
Could you keep your voice up?
Yes, ma'am.
Thanks.
This case has two issues. It has a statutory interpretation issue, which I consider to be a property issue, and it has the First Amendment issue, which I consider to be a speech issue. I'd like to talk first about the statutory interpretation of the property issue at hand. The statute, which is laid out by the General Assembly, has private property in section, subsection A, and subsection B details a public place. Mr. Turner was found guilty of displaying a noose on a public place. I asked the court to look at 18.2, 423.2, subsection A, which says any person who, with the intent of intimidating any person or group of persons, displays a noose on the private property of another without permission is guilty of class 6 felony. Subsection B states any person who, with the intent of intimidating any person or group of persons, displays a noose on a highway or other public place in a manner having a direct tendency to place another person in reasonable fear of apprehension of death or bodily injury is guilty of class 6 felony.
All right, let me interrupt the counsel, because the General Assembly, of course, picks the words they put in the statute. We write all the time in a lot of opinions that we presume that they choose their words carefully. That may be not true at all if anybody spent any time in Richmond, but nonetheless, that's our mandate. The General Assembly here did not use the term public property. They didn't use the term public highway, all of which are terms that are used elsewhere in the Code of Virginia. They used the word public place, and it seems to me and they didn't define it, so they used the common dictionary definition, and the common dictionary definition of public is simply a place accessible or visible to all members of the community. And I remember some years ago in a case called Chrislip versus Commonwealth, this court resolved the issue of an individual who resisted arrest, and his argument was that he had a right to resist the arrest for being drunk in public because the place where he was drunk and he admitted being drunk was on his own front porch, where I think, if I recall correctly, he was, you know, going to grill some burgers or something. But in any event, he was on his own property, similar to what we have here. And this court held in that case that the use of the term in public in the context of that particular statute included any place visible to the public, including private property. Now, it seems to me, by using the term public place, and you apply the definition of the common definition of the term public, you've got what amounts to a redundant definition that it would include private property as long as it's visible to the general public, which would include the property in question here, where, while it's private, is right alongside the road, where it can be viewed, and it was intended to be viewed by the victims in this case.
And Your Honor, in the Crispin case, which I read that case when we were dealing with this, he was arrested under the drunk in public statute, which has the specific language of in public, which I think was adapted because that was in public view. This statute lays out private property separate from or visible from another public place. So, Your Honor, I think there is a difference. One is content based, whereas this gentleman, Chrisler, was on his porch. He was drunk. He was aggravated with the police and with his wife. And, Your Honor, this is a speech issue here. This is a symbol that's displayed.
Well, that's a different issue. The constitutional issue is a different issue. Let's not mix apples and oranges here, counsel. So in terms of your first point is statutory interpretation, and I understand where you're coming from, and you're making certainly a good faith attempt to make the argument, but clearly public place is different from public property, it seems to me. Would you agree that much at least?
I would agree with that, Sean.
Okay.
Yes. But I think the public place, and I think the court has touched on it, the public place is a vague term. It's not defined in anywhere that I can find it other than in case law and in Title 4.1, Section 100 under the Alcohol, Beverage, and Control Act, which this court took up with the Crisplick matter, which defined any public place as any building or conveyance to which the public has or is permitted to have access in the court. And Title 4.1, Section 100 laid out some areas. None of which.
What about Barnes? Barnes interpreted public place. That Barnes happened to involve a jail, a public facility.
And I agree that's a public place. I think the argument that that's his home is just not a valid argument. I think the court correctly interpreted it.
But in point of fact, we're interpreting the same phrase, public place. And there, the issue was the fact that the indecent exposure could be viewed by any member of the public who happened to be outside of this individual's jail cell. So, I mean, while it's true, it's public property, it also meets the definition of public property. My point is the definition of public place was construed there. Why wouldn't that definition apply here as well?
Well, because I think that Mr. Turner's yard is his private property. Although it's visible from a public highway, I don't believe...
We all agree it's his private property. The question is the place where this noose was displayed a public place?
No.
Even though it was on private property? I know you say no. do I quote you in the opinion? Is that how this works?
Yes, John, you would. But on the Barnes matter, I agree with you that it is... I mean, the jail is owned by the state. It is, I mean, it's a public place, but it's not a private residence for the inmates. The jail cell does not have, it's got bars, but it does not have curtains. It's open to the public. And the indecent exposure statute just requires in any place where others are present, as well as to be or in a public place. And so I think that there is that difference with this statute here that we're looking at. And again, I would touch on that I believe that the careful construction of the statute, I don't believe that we can say that private property and a public place are one and the same. I think if you look at the new statute...
But isn't there a factor that goes into that that's also what your reasonable expectation of privacy would be? If you take a shower in your backyard, but that's visible from the street, clearly you don't have an expectation of privacy in that shower. Is that a pretty fair statement?
I would agree with that.
So how is this any different?
Well, that's conduct versus speech. I think we're looking at...
Well, again, we're talking about the definition of public place.
I understand. And I think if you're visible from the road and you're doing something that it has a conduct-based statute that you're not allowed to do, I think, again, you know, that's where you get into that problem. But I'm not going to say that a person's yard is a public place if it's visible from the highway when it's coming to speech and symbols being displayed on that person's private property. And if I could, I do want to touch just a bit on the Burning Cross statute, which is 18.2.423. That statute, which was carefully construed and then changed with the Black case by the Supreme Court, it says it shall be unlawful for any person or persons with the intent of intimidating any person or group of persons to burn or cause to be burned a cross on the property of another, a highway, or other public place. Again, that's limiting. You cannot burn a cross on the property of another, a highway, or a public place. The statute with the displaying of the noose lays out in two different subsections. One, private property without permission. Two, display on a highway or other public place. So I think there is a difference there. I think the General Assembly drafted this statute.
The statutes are very, very similar. In fact, they join each other. Prohibition against cross-burning, prohibition against nooses, and prohibition against swastikas. And it seems to me any interpretation of any of those statutes is going to have to be considered as part of our analysis to any other part because of the similarity is so great.
Yes, sir. I think the main determination is for a court to determine what a public place actually is.
But I don't want you to use up all your time on the statutory interpretation issue. I know you want to address the constitutional issue, but let me start you off by asking you about Virginia versus Black, which seems to me applies here. Virginia versus Black was a cross-burning situation, and I should disclose up front that of the three cases that comprise Virginia versus Black, one of them came out of Virginia Beach, and I prosecuted it. So, and that was the one of the ones was upheld by the Virginia Supreme Court. So, having disclosed that, the U.S. Supreme Court held in Black that Virginia could criminalize speech which also poses a threat or a deliberate intimidation or that's intended to deliberately intimidate. In other words, it's similar to the crying fire in a crowded theater. Not every kind of speech is protected. Some kinds of speech are not protected, and at least in the abstract, cross-burning is one of them. Why isn't displaying a noose in a similar category?
Well, Well, in Black, the court found that true threats are not protected speech, which the court has alluded to. And it also went on to say that true threats encompass those statements where the speaker means to communicate a serious expression of an intent to commit an act of unlawful violence to a particular individual or a group of individuals. Here, the facts, there was no direct threat to any individual directly.
Let me stop you again, because burning a cross in the abstract is in the court, the U.S. Supreme Court found that Virginia's policy to criminalize that was not void. In other words, it could be overbroad, and it was in one of those cases, but in the abstract, it was perfectly permissible for Virginia to criminalize the burning of a cross. Now, it seems to me burning of a cross is one thing, but displaying a noose, which is a mechanism for execution, I think up until recently, up until the 1970s, was the mechanism for execution in a couple of states, including Delaware, where I used to practice. So, you know, to your argument that it is not ipso facto intimidating seems to me to be, you know, kind of disingenuous a little bit. Maybe that's too strong a word. But the point is that it simply is, it would seem to be in the abstract, much more intuitive to conclude that a noose is more threatening than a cross, a burning cross.
Well, I think that if you look at the history, I think the cross burning is a strong symbol of hate. And I don't want to get into the history of a boat, Your Honor, but I would say that displaying a noose, it is apparent that the statute allows a person to display a noose on private property without, you can't do it without permission. But if you do it without intimidating a person like they do at Scare Mirror, these Halloween events where they have a noose hanging, sometimes you have a dummy hanging on the noose when you walk into these scary events, it's a prop, it's a show, it's something to scare people.
And it's clearly intended to be that, and I think it's probably important to look at the facts of this case. And you're right, we don't have to go into the history of what hanging a noose would mean and how lynching is certainly considered very hateful and threatening, but you've got your client who is a self-described racist. You've got the folks that live next door to him to whom he has been openly hostile, both in words through the notes and indeed through the flipping the bird and the things of that nature when he would see them. And then he hangs what is clearly an effigy, which is of color, from a noose in his backyard in plain view of not only the street but also the neighbors. How on earth are they supposed to take that, if not as a threat?
Well, I would go back to the facts where there were never any direct derogatory comments made towards the Mitchells or the Witchers from Mr. Turner. He never used any disturbing language, per se, racial epithets and things of that nature. If there are no other questions, I'd like to reserve the last minute.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Morning again.
It's the court, Christiana Bell from the Commonwealth. Again, as opposing counsel has indicated, there are two issues involved in this case. The first is constitutional, and the second is one of statutory interpretation. The constitutional question in this case boils down to whether or not Mr. Turner had a First Amendment constitutional right to threaten his African-American neighbors by hanging a noose and a dummy in effigy in his front yard.
Should our analysis in this case be any different than the U.S. Supreme Court's was in Black?
The only additional element of analysis in this particular case is the question of whether or not the fact that it occurred on his private property changed anything. The U.S. Supreme Court held in Madsen.
Well, that's a statutory interpretation question.
Well, as I understand Mr. Turner's argument, and you can correct me, Andrew Bildheim, if I'm wrong, his argument is that somehow by limiting this where he hung this noose to his front yard, that raised his First Amendment constitutional protections such that he should be allowed to do this under the First Amendment, even though if he had done it in the street or in a public park, et cetera, that he would not have a First Amendment protection. There are not a lot of courts that have addressed that question, because I think it's fairly well assumed that you do not have a constitutional right to threaten people, whether you do that on public property or private property. The only time the U.S. Supreme Court has gotten close to addressing the question is in Madsen, which is a case in 2003, I believe, addressing abortion protesters on the sidewalk. And what the court stated in that case is that true threats, no matter how they are communicated, can constitutionally be prohibited by the state. So that would seem to include whether they're communicated from public property or from private property, that you do not have a First Amendment right to threaten anyone. And that conduct may be constitutionally proscribed, which is what happened here. In this particular case, I want to talk about what we know based on the facts. And this is not just what a reasonable fact finder could have concluded, but it's actually what has become the law of the case, because opposing counsel has not challenged the sufficiency of the evidence to prove either that Mr. Turner had the intent to intimidate his neighbors, or he also has not challenged the sufficiency of the evidence to prove that he hung the noose in a manner having a direct tendency to place a person or group of persons in reasonable fear or apprehension of death or bodily injury. Because of that, that has become the law of the case. Mr. Turner hung the noose with the intent to intimidate people, and he did so in such a way that it was reasonable for people to see it and to be placed in fear of bodily injury or harm. If you read the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Virginia versus Black, what the court said there is, in defining what constitutes a true threat occurs when someone with the intent to intimidate someone expresses their intent to place that person in fear of reasonable injury or bodily harm or of death. So by constructing the statute in the way the General Assembly did, our new statute, what the General Assembly effectively did was criminalized only conduct which constitutes a true threat under the United States Supreme Court definition of true threats in Virginia versus Black. So anytime that a conviction is properly obtained in the Commonwealth under Virginia's new statute and all the elements of the statute are properly met, there is no constitutional problem because of the way the statute is worded to only prohibit conduct that the state may constitutionally prohibit according to the United States Supreme Court definition in Black.
Well, I understood your opponent's argument to essentially be there's a geographic component to the First Amendment analysis. And it seems to me, I guess I understand your argument to be basically speech is either protected or it's not. If it's protected everywhere. And if it's not protected anywhere.
Correct, Your Honor. And Madison, United States Supreme Court decision, stands for that proposition. And additionally, the very few cases, I searched long and hard for cases addressing this particular issue. The only cases I could find on the issue, those courts that were willing, and these were lower courts, not the United States Supreme Court, but those courts that were willing to entertain the idea that perhaps there might be different constitutional rights depending on whether you're on private property or public property. There's a Ninth Circuit Planned Parenthood case that I cited in my brief. The argument there was...
I never thought I'd hear the Attorney General's office reduced to citing Ninth Circuit cases.
Abortion cases, yes, Your Honor. But nonetheless, the dissenters and the majority opinion in that case, I think, got it right. The majority held that there is no distinction for constitutional purposes between private and public property. The dissenters in that case would have held that a threat made privately or on private property is entitled to lesser First Amendment protections because by making the threat in private, there is a greater chance that threat is a serious threat. When you're making a threat directly to individual people and as opposed to standing in the public marketplace and just expressing these threats kind of generally, there's a greater risk of harm that the legislature may constitutionally prescribe consistent with the First Amendment. So if anything, if there were to be a distinction, it would cut against Mr. Turner's argument, not in favor of it. But as I have argued, there is no distinction consistently with the United States Supreme Court case law between public and private property for the constitutional question. Unless there are any...
No, I have a question.
Yes, Your Honor.
In looking at the statute, help me understand this. In subsection B, the legislature uses the word highway.
Correct, Your Honor.
And it uses the words public place.
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, highway arguably is both public property and public place.
Yes, Your Honor.
In trying to then understand how to define public place in this statute, the legislature also added the words that preceded it, or other public place. Does that narrow in this statute the definition of public place by virtue of relating it to the word highway?
I don't think it does, Your Honor, and here's why. I think all that represents is the fact that the General Assembly recognized, as you said, that a highway is a public place. And they wanted to go further and not just criminalize this type of behavior that occurs on a highway, but also criminalize behavior that occurs in other public places.
Why couldn't they have just said public place?
they likely could have just said public place if they had wanted to. But they decided to be a little bit, they decided to narrowly and specifically single out a highway. Perhaps they were particularly concerned about these nooses being hung in highways for some reason. But then they decided to go a step further and to also encompass within the scope of what's criminalized other public places. And I think that language is broad enough, given the definitions that Virginia courts have adopted for years, going back to 1947 and Hackney versus Commonwealth, the Supreme Court United States case. The definitions adopted there in the context of disorderly conduct are definitely broad enough to include the location on the front yard, on the edge of Mr. Turner's property, where it was plainly visible to people in the public passing by on the road. I would add that because Hackney was passed in 1947, in 2009, when the Virginia General Assembly passed this statute, they were surely aware of the existence of that case law. And the three definitions that the Supreme Court recognized as permissible definitions there. In that particular case, the defendant was, I think cursing at his mother who was passing by in the street 30 feet from his front porch. He was on his front porch and making those disorderly statements. And the only question on appeal for the Supreme Court was whether that front porch constituted a public place. For purposes of determining whether he was engaging in disorderly conduct in public. The statute says in a public place, just like our statute says, in an other public place. And there, based on the definitions of what constitutes public place, the court concluded that he was. And the court actually went a step further in that case and held that even if it were to conclude that his front porch was not a public place, because criminal agency includes not just where you are when you commit the act, but also where that act's consequences occur, that because the victim in the case was on a public highway in what was inarguably a public place, his disorderly conduct on the front porch extended and included where the effects of that disorderly conduct were felt, which was on the highway, which was a public place. By the exact same analysis in this case, Mr. Turner's convictions could be upheld under one of two theories, either under the theory that he was in a public place, or the dummy was hung in a public place because it was on the front edge of his yard where it was, you couldn't miss it if you're passing by in the public place on the road. But secondly, the court could conclude that he displayed a noose in a public place because the effects of that display were felt by people driving by on the road in front of the house. And so that his prohibited conduct extended to that public place, regardless of whether the court reaches the question of whether or not his yard constitutes a public place. And that would be consistent with the Virginia Supreme Court's decision in Hackney. So under either theory, his conduct, prohibited conduct, the evidence was sufficient to prove that it occurred.
Well, Mr. Sandoval, I'm looking at the statute, and I appreciate your argument, but I mean, I think we have to, in fairness to your opponent, we have to note that the public place is modified by the word displays. And so it seems to me the General Assembly is clearly not looking so much at where the effects are felt, but where the display is located. Now, whether that includes this particular, geographic location or not is another issue, and it turns on the definition of the word public or public place, I suppose. But I think it might be a little, criminal statutes are supposed to be interpreted strictly against the Commonwealth. So I understand you're urging a broad definition here, but I'm not sure we can go where you'd like us to go.
Well, the court certainly doesn't need to go there. The court can certainly conclude. I think the easiest definition of public place includes the front edge of your yard where it's clearly visible from passing motorists and people walking by in the street. If the court does read Hackney, in that case, the Supreme Court dealt with the rule of lenity, though, and concluded that even though the rule of lenity applies in criminal cases and penal statutes, statutes still are to be read in a way that's consistent with the legislature's intent. And in that case, the statute prohibited engaging in disorderly conduct in a public place, which I think is similar to displaying a noose in a public place. And in that case, the court concluded that the defendant engaged in disorderly conduct in a public place even though he was still standing on the porch, because that conduct extended to the place where his disorderly conduct was viewed, because that's the type of harm that the General Assembly was trying to prohibit and trying to prevent against, was the harm caused by people viewing that offensive conduct. In this particular case, the type of harm that the General Assembly is trying to prohibit is the type of harm caused by caused by the viewing and the hearing of threats of bodily harm or death. And in this particular case, that is exactly what happened. The victims in this case were placed in fear of bodily harm or death for themselves or for their families. And they were placed in that fear because they were able to view this news as they were passing by in a public place. So I think consistently with the legislature's intent, you could include the fact that the street was a public place and that the conduct was felt there consistently with what the statute prohibits. But it might be a much more straightforward approach just to simply say that the edge of his yard also was a public place based on how that term was defined both in Hackney and in Barnes. In both of those cases, the only question was whether or not public place, the place at issue, fell within the standard definition for public place. In both cases, it did, and here, equally, it does it well. It does as well. With that all being said, we're going to ask the court to affirm. Unless there are any further questions for the Commonwealth,
no questions.
I'm happy to rest on my brief in this
Thank
case.
You, Mr. Chantabelle.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Perdue.
I'd like to touch on the front edge comment. I think the record will reflect it was about 50 yards off the highway. I think it's what Captain Caldwell testified to. This was not a noose that was hanging right on the side edge of the property, like on a mailbox or something. This was off the road in a set of trees beside his house, which I believe the testimony at trial was 50 yards. So I want to clarify that this was not right off the highway. The other thing, again, I would like to go back just to the statutory interpretation of 18.24, 23.2 for a second, and just state that I think subsection A is very clear that if a person were to call someone and say, hey, you can put a noose on my property, on my private property, I give you permission. I think it's permittable to do that. And so therefore, I think that you have the right to do it on your own property. The statute says that you cannot do it without permission. But I guess what it boils down to is determining whether or not private property and public, the public place, can be one and the same. I ask the court to consider all the arguments in the brief, and I ask the court to reverse the decision of the trial court.
Thank you very much. And consistent with the custom of the court, we'll come